Welcome to the podcast. By the way, while you're here, and hopefully you're subscribed to this very podcast, we have a lot of other ones as well, including Pat Gray Unleashed, Chewing the Fat with Jeff Fisher, which
lots
that one I would
lots of fat.
Lots of fat on that one. We have Ali Stuckey. We have Chad Prather. There's a ton of them that you need to check out.
Virtual cornucopia.
Mm-hmm. And I'll give you news and why it matters as well, where we have a panel of us. Glenn and I are both on the panel where we talk about all the news of the day every single day. So plenty of stuff to check out here on the podcast.
And please rate, subscribe, rate, and review because it helps other people discover these podcasts. On today's podcast, a very good day for Donald Trump. We'll tell you why. Good day for Israel as well. We also have found the perfect candidate. Why are we messing around with these young spring chickens for the Democratic nominee? We found the perfect nominee for president of the United States. I mean, if Bernie and Elizabeth Warren and
Biden
in their 70s, let's go for real experience. We'll introduce you to that coming up. Also, Bill O'Reilly is with us. Robert Epstein is this amazing guy from Harvard who is finding that now in 2018, Google again swayed the results of the election and influenced 78 million people with their results and could have changed the election. Nobody wants to hear about it. It was breaking news today in Los Angeles and the Los Angeles Times, but even the Times got the story wrong, according to him. You'll find that news out today. And one interview with Sean Carney, 40 Days for Life campaign. Amazing stats on what's happening with Planned Parenthood and how it's coming undone. All that and more on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
I love Patriot Mobile. Here's the thing. Cell service, almost all of it is exactly the same because everybody's using the same cell towers, okay? And what these companies do is they get their own customers and they charge all kinds of really high prices. Then they sell time on that tower to other companies and they charge really, really the low basic rate. Now, you're denying those companies that own those cell towers the money, all that big fat profit, to be able to go and donate to things like Planned Parenthood. So if you switch to another one that has the same coverage but is not giving that big fat profit, you hurt that, you know, big company. You also help the little company and you help your own causes because that little company is not giving all the money to Planned Parenthood. That's Patriot Mobile. They share your values. They know what you are, what your hard-earned money is worth, and they'll give you the exact same coverage. It's patriotmobile.com/blaze. patriotmobile.com/blaze. Go sign up now. They make the transition really, really simple. Switch to Patriot Mobile now. Stu, let's start with the news on the Mueller report.
Really a good day for Donald Trump today. There's a report from ABC News. It comes from John Carl, who, I mean, if you're going to talk about, you know, White House correspondence that you would probably trust.
Kind of trust?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't really trust anybody on any side anymore. But
sure, I mean, of course.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you're going to talk about a reliable source, I mean, John Carl would be towards the top of the list of that. And the fact that they're reporting something positive for Trump, any media source, you kind of think, wow, that really must be true.
That hurts.
Right?
That hurts them. They're like, I can't do it. Do it, man. You've got to do it.
So Carl has sources within the, or close to the Russia investigation is what they're saying. Sources close to the Russia investigation are saying that they should not expect and do not expect any more indictments. At all.
Wait a minute. No, that can't be. No, they've got to indict Donald Trump. They have to indict his children.
Right.
They have to, you know, go after his mother who's been dead. She's got to be in jail.
Right.
Everybody around Donald Trump has got to be in jail.
Yeah, apparently not, at least according to this report. Now, I, again, caution, because, and we do this every time there's bad news on this front. You have to caution the fact that these reports a lot of times come out and there's nothing to them. I mean, we've seen this happen multiple times. And also, until the report comes out, you just don't know. I mean, we've been playing this game where you have these updates, and we try to give them to you in summarized sort of basic form, because there's no reason to obsess about the twists and turns of this every day.
No.
And the report's going to come out at some point. We'll be able to read it, we hope. And because that's not really confirmed either.
Well, we paid for it.
Right.
I mean,
we should get some piece of information from this report.
Yes.
And at that point, we can judge it. But what they're saying now is what is out there is out there. The people who've been indicted are the people that are going to get indicted by the Mueller report, and that's going to be it. Now, I think it's easy to go to this and say, okay, well, this has been a total witch hunt, and you know, nothing came of this. I don't think that that's actually true. I mean, remember, we keep complaining about this being about other things, right? It's about drugs. Well, it's all of a sudden it's about Trump's business dealings, or it's also about all these different items unrelated to the Russia election probe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there have been real things that have happened with the Mueller investigation as associated to that probe. I mean, they've identified dozens of people, specific people in Russia, who were responsible for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is another case of the media being so obsessed with Donald Trump constantly that everyone sees this report as if it's specifically about him, when it's never supposed to be about him. It's supposed to be about whether Russia interrupted and tried to screw up our elections.
Right. And who was involved.
And who was involved. And we've seen that, some of that come to fruition. Now, the fact that we can't arrest people in Russia, and we can't necessarily put them on trial, but we did learn a lot about how they tried to influence the elections, what they did, who they were tied to. And, of course, the other associations with people like Manafort and such that were caught on unrelated, you know, mm-hmm. sort of situations here. So we may very well find out interesting things from the Mueller report. But that being said, it looks to be today very good news for Trump and the people very close to him,
right,
including his family, that looks like they will not be indicted.
Anybody who is in trouble in this are all of the people that we said during the election. They are trouble. They're trouble. You've got to get away from those people. We said there would be, if these are the kind of people that he surrounds himself with, there will be hearings all the way through because they're corrupt.
Yeah.
And
Michael
talked
Cohen
about
being
them.
The most obvious example.
I thought it was Manafort that was the most obvious. You know,
that's a tough question.
I mean, it's tough.
That's two really fast sprinters going for the gold there.
Right. And as soon as he got rid of those people, as soon as they were away from him, he really doesn't have that many problems when it comes to, you know, shady business or anything else. He doesn't have, it was those people around him.
Yeah. Mattis isn't having any investigations on him.
Right.
There's a lot of good people that he's had in there and then have had no problems at all. The group that sort of was in there early and is now, you know, all of the people that we talked about. I mean, if you go back to Manafort, you go back to Cohen, Steve Bannon, the guy
with Nixon on his back. What's his name?
Oh, Roger Stone.
Roger Stone.
That's a great one. The general who did get in trouble in the Mueller report as well, Flynn. There's more than that. But, I mean, that was the basic list of people. Omarosa is another great one.
Right.
That we were saying, like, what? You can't surround yourself with these people. Well, now Trump has, with the exception, I would say, of Flynn, where Flynn, he feels was really wronged in the way that this investigation went. But he's disassociated himself with all of these people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of them. All of them, he says, are, you know, liars and terrible people for the most part. And he's right. He is 100% on the money with most of them. Flynn is the one I would say is a relative exception to that, in that I think he really feels he was kind of wrong and didn't like firing him.
He hasn't replaced them with dirtbags.
Yeah.
I mean, it's I think he understands you can't put slimy people in. Around, you're the president, you can't do that.
Becomes too much of a distraction.
Yeah.
And so, you know, whether this turns up to into something else, we don't know for sure yet. But I mean, this is a good day for Donald Trump on this, in that it looks like there's not going to be any big bombshell that's going to come out of this report. And I it's kind of what we suspected the entire time, right?
Mm-hmm.
I never was a believer in the idea that they were going to find something big against Donald Trump in the Mueller report per se, but this is not going to end this, of course. You know, the Democrats still run the House. They're going to still keep investigating and bringing up witnesses and going after whatever they can find. So it's not like this is over, but it is a big step. And Mueller was seen as a very credible source as opposed to the Democratic House, which is going to just do whatever they do on a partisan level.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this
is going to hurt them.
Yeah,
it's going to hurt them. If this comes out clean, it's going to hurt them.
Well, you're seeing the media cover kind of prepare the audience for this. I've noticed this lately that, like, look, the Mueller report is not the end all be all here. I mean, first of all, you might not even see the whole thing. Second
right.
of all, this is really, in reality, it's just a roadmap. This is going to give a roadmap to the Democrats to be able to launch more investigations because mm-hmm. they're going to be able to take nuggets out of the Mueller report and they're going to be able to go find other things. They're going to be able to pull other witnesses and get other documents as if Mueller couldn't get these documents.
Yeah.
You know, but that is what they're going to use it for. Certainly, this is not going away.
And it will hurt them.
If it comes off as disingenuous,
yeah. If the economy is strong, the Mueller report comes out clean, and we don't find out any like really bad stuff about Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
And the Democrats decide to pursue and make this all about impeachment. They don't even have to go to impeachment. Mm-hmm. Just make it about impeachment. All those investigations. People will not want their socialism if the economy is good. They will not want their socialism. They will not want their anti-Semitism. They will not want their, infanticide fantasies. And they won't want a Congress that is locked up in nothing but hearings and scandal and investigation. They'll want to move forward. And that is the best news for Donald Trump. But it hinges on this report from ABC being real,
mm-hmm.
And the economy staying strong.
Yeah, those are two incredibly important things. I will say as well, we should give an update maybe after the break, after the 1 minute pause here for a sponsor, about what Trump did with Israel yesterday, which is another really good piece of news, I think, for him.
I do too. And it's fascinating because yesterday, MoveOn.org said that they will not support anyone who attends AIPAC. So if you are a Democratic candidate, they said, if you want to be the nominee, don't show up at the AIPAC conference. And so they're drawing a hard line. And yesterday, Donald Trump drew a very hard line on Israel as well, in a positive way, if you're a supporter of Israel.
The best of the Glenn Beck program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
I want you to know, this is the kind of freak that you are surrounding yourself with. The Democratic Party. This is it.
Yeah. Yes.
This is it.
This should be the head of the Democratic National Committee right here.
They should start the convention. They can go out every morning as the convention starts, and they can just do their little yoga class.
They're like the hype unit.
Right.
Come on, get everybody pumped up. Or the opposite.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's true. It's just so bizarre. But the good news is, you know, it's a whole new kind of way of life led by, 70 and 80 year olds. And I think that's good. I think that's what people are looking for, is, do we have a dynamic 75, 80 year old man?
New ideas.
That has some new ideas. That aren't really new, but,
Well, like 1800s, like middle of the 1800s ideas.
Right.
That's what I'm looking for.
That's what I'm looking for.
Somebody who's,
the founders didn't get it, but Marx.
Oh, he got it.
And that white-haired guy.
Those guys, man. They got it.
When they were in Germany coming up with this stuff, they got it.
They were really good.
Is there an element, though, where the Democrats are just not, they're not embracing this enough? They're not just going for it? I mean, you bring out Bernie Sanders, who's in his 70s. You bring out a Joe Biden, Elizabeth
also
Warren.
Also in his late 70s.
Yeah. Warren is what, in her early 70s?
Yep.
She's the spring chicken of that particular group.
Right.
But it just feels like you're not really owning it. Like, if you want someone with real
these
experience,
are posers.
You don't go with these youngins.
These are posers.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Right. Go for somebody with real experience. Mm-hmm. And we'd like to draft somebody for the Democratic Party. We went online. We looked for the oldest Democrat in America.
And we yes. found it.
You want to give his history bit?
I would love to, Glenn. He was born on January 4th, 1919.
Okay? 1919.
Yes.
Okay. So he's 100.
He's 100 years
100.
Old. Okay.
He'll be 101 when he's sworn into office.
Nice.
He served in the U.S. House of Representatives yes. in New York's 3rd District uh-huh. from 1965 to 1973.
Oh my gosh.
Why would we let this guy go? Why are they not going after him?
I don't know. So, he joined the U.S. House of Representatives in 1973 and served all the way to 1981.
Now, I've been clamoring for Dick Gephardt. This guy's even better.
This guy is this even guy's
oh,
better.
No.
He's better than Dick Gephardt.
Oh, come on.
Gephardt's only 79.
It's time to draft Lester L. Wolf for 2020. Mm-hmm. Lester is, I mean, and I got his slogan. He's a wolf in old man skin.
That's a right? great slogan.
So
he'll be aggressive. He'll get you your socialism.
Lester L. Wolf for 2020. He'll be 100 and 1 in 2020.
Now, we have the campaign art made up. We'll yeah. post this on glenbeck.com mm-hmm. here. You're seeing
he's a good-looking man.
Good-looking
for 100, you kidding me?
For 100. Now, they couldn't get him to look up into the lens of the camera for this shot that
he's
we're 100. Using. But
he's 100.
You know, he's
his
deep
eyes
in
tired.
Reflection.
This guy has, 20, 30 years more experience than some of these Democratic challengers.
He was closer to the new ideas.
Yes.
Yeah, way closer.
He was there. I mean, think about it.
He was almost there.
He was there. He, you know, his probably his first president he's remembering is like Woodrow Wilson.
No, he wouldn't. Really? Not at one.
Well.
You know, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe
as his first memory. You might have, but he went through all the FDR stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is a guy who has real experience, mm-hmm. not like these young candidates of today who
like Joe Biden
and Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren.
Those whippersnappers don't even know.
I know. I want Lester L. Wolf for president in 2020.
So please tweet. We'll give you. We'll start this really. We'll have all the campaign materials for you by mm-hmm. Monday. But we'd like you to tweet Lester L. Wolf. Draft Lester L. Wolf for 2020.
W-O-L-F-F.
Right.
W-O-L-F-F. I've been looking at some of his VP candidates, by the way. I've got some good nominations. There's a guy in Connecticut who's 99. He's going to be 100 soon. So he's like right on the tail of that Lester L. Wolf. Can you imagine? I think his last name is Grabowski.
Did he serve?
Wolf Grabowski 2020.
In Congress?
Yeah. He was
okay, good.
And I like, because right. Lester L. Wolf actually had a pretty long career, and he hosted Ask Congress on PBS for many years, apparently. And he was a pretty accomplished guy. I like this guy Grabowski, though, because I think he served like one term. So I think like in like 1967. So, like, you just bring him back
up. So, he's almost an outsider, but he does have experience.
Yes!
I like
that's
that
the thing
guy.
I like, too, about
I like
Wolf.
That. Yeah.
Wolf's been an outsider for
a long time.
For 40 years. So he's not part of the Washington,
swamp.
Swamp. He's coming in from the outside.
He's worked in the private sector
right.
for
yeah,
all
for
this
a
time.
And, it's electric when you hear him, when he wheels up to say,
that's what fires me up.
It really gets me every time. It gets me every time.
I get chills. Yeah. I've got chills just from hearing you recreate it.
Wait until you hear the real audio of him him saying or not
like
saying
it.
That. It's it's great. So Lester L. Wolf
for
president.
In 2020. Mm-hmm. This is a real, I think this can make
like
a real
it's a
difference.
Game changer.
Look,
yeah.
everyone else in the Democratic Party is already running. He's the
now,
only one left
can I tell
not
you,
currently in the race.
Can I tell you who will like this idea? And because there's a possibility if you get one of these old timers in, again, spring chickens compared to Lester. Mm-hmm. But if you get somebody like, Biden, who is, how old is Biden?
77 years old.
77.
He'll be 79 if he
okay.
wins.
There is a realistic chance that he doesn't make it to the end. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now he might. He might be one of those guys that lives to be 85. But there is a realistic chance that, he just doesn't make it all the way through. Mm-hmm. So the person that's really into this is somebody like Biden and Beto. Anybody who is supporting Beto, all they need to do is get him in as vice president. I think Beto would be a guy who would want to draft Lester L. Wolf.
And then be his running mate, perhaps?
Bring his running mate.
Because I think Lester might step down. He might step down after getting into office.
Hey, I don't mean to be somebody. I mean, he's a picture. Put a picture up again of him. He is the picture of health.
He is.
But he'd probably make it 2 terms.
Oh, I think he definitely would.
Yeah.
Oh, Lester's going to 108. You know he is.
Or technically,
he'd probably be more like
109.
Maybe even 110 by the end.
Yeah.
I am of the opinion that he will never die. Will.
Well, his spirit and the movement that Lester L. Wolf is starting right here on this program today.
Yeah.
That movement will live on way past Lester.
And we should point out this is a grassroots movement. We created all the campaign art for it, but it's only going to succeed if people really get behind the candidacy of Lester L. Wolf in 2020. People really need to get behind it, tweet about it.
Could we tweet the artwork out right now so you have access to that artwork? Put it up on Facebook, because when you see him, you know, you think to yourself, this is ridiculous. Please. But when you see him and you see the artwork, you're like, this could be the next candidate for the Democrats.
Yeah, and I think only the haters would say this is ridiculous. Only the ageophobes.
We all know we live in a different world. It's not the same. And that's why the Democrats are giving you the option to really make radical change by electing an old white man. Mm-hmm. Because that is completely different.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and if you like what you hear on the program, you should check out Pat Gray Unleashed. His podcast is available wherever you download your favorite podcast. I want to start with Bill O'Reilly here with an interview where Donald Trump was talking about John McCain. Listen.
Kill and replace. We would have had great health care.
But, Mr. President, he's dead. He can't punch back. I know you punch back,
no,
but he's dead.
I don't talk about it. People ask me the question. I didn't bring this up. You just brought it up. You asked the question.
Well, you talked about it this week.
You asked me the question. When I went out yesterday to the scrum, they asked me the question. When they asked me the question, I answered the question. But you people bring it up. I don't bring it up. I'm not a fan. He was horrible what he did with repeal and replace. It was what he did to the Republican Party and to the nation and to sick people that could have had great health care was not good. So I'm not a fan of John McCain, and that's fine.
Do you feel a responsibility as president to bring the nation together?
I do. And I think I am in a certain way bringing it together. I can tell you that a big portion of this nation is united like it's never been united before. You look at our economy, you look at jobs, you look at African American, the lowest in the history of our country, unemployment numbers, the best numbers they've ever had.
But that's what I'm saying.
Hispanic, you look at Asian, you look at women, the best in 65 years, best numbers in 65 years. I think I am bringing it together. I think I'm bringing it together.
Not by talking about John McCain.
I just said you brought up a question, Maria. I didn't bring it up. I didn't mention John McCain until you asked me a question about John McCain. Now, I could say I have no comment, but that's not me. But you shouldn't have brought it up. Actually, I thought you weren't supposed to bring it up, but that's okay. You know, fake news every once in a while.
It's not fake news. You just told me why you have an issue with him.
A very serious issue. He handed something to the FBI on me. He knew it was a fake. He handed it to the FBI. That's an issue.
And now we're going to get
repeal and replace of Obamacare. Mm-hmm. He campaigned for years. That's an issue. But I didn't bring it up, Marie. You did.
What do you think of this, Bill?
Stupid. I mean, look. Donald Trump's mad because John McCain played a dirty game on him. Apparently, by congressional testimony, that's true. Because there's dossier, which had all kinds of horrible things about Trump that weren't true, was floating around D.C. Somebody gave it to McCain. McCain gave it to the FBI and other people. That's pretty bad.
Well, wait a minute. Wait.
I would be angry.
If you received this dossier and it was going around, would you not, instead of talking about it or just dismissing it, you have this dossier, it's going around, wouldn't you bring it to the FBI and say, can you guys prove this or disprove this? But this is bad. Either direction, if it's true, if it's not true, it's got to be stopped.
Absolutely not. I would not do that. I would give it to the Republican National Committee if I'm one of the stalwarts of the party. I wouldn't give it to the FBI because that gives it credibility. I would then go public and say somebody handed me this thing. Here's who handed it to me. And, you know, it's unverified because he couldn't have verified it, McCain, because it's not true. So I think he handled it wrong. But I don't think the president should be harping on it because it doesn't do anybody any good.
No.
It certainly doesn't do the country any good.
No.
And it distracts away from what he wants to talk about, which is the economy and the executive order telling the universities, if you deny freedom of speech, you're not going to get federal money. That's a pretty good executive order. How many people know that happened yesterday?
Not a lot. I mean, it's been McCain. Right.
So the president, you know, he just keeps sabotaging himself. All right, we understand why you're mad. Make a statement, one or two lines, and that's the end of it. But when Barromo brings it up, he has a point. He says, look, I can't just say no comment. You're asking me about it. But for me, here's what I would have done, Beck. I would have said, John McCain put out this dossier in a sneaky way. I found out about it through congressional testimony. I wish he had not done it, but I forgive him. What's the next question? Wouldn't that been the way to do it?
Yes. Can I ask you a question? Somebody was here yesterday who was a person on The Apprentice, a contestant on The Apprentice during the John McCain election. And this person told me that they talked about the election off camera. And he had said he was a friend of John McCain's. He liked him and he felt that he needed to vote for him just out of loyalty to their friendship. He wasn't sure about this Palin woman, but he was a friend with John McCain. You've known him for all those years. Was he a friend with John McCain?
He was an acquaintance, and he gave him money, and he publicly endorsed him. But he wasn't talking to me about John McCain. I don't think they had any social interaction. But at that point, Trump wanted to defeat Barack Obama. He didn't like Obama because Obama was bad for business.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, he supported McCain. He gave McCain money. Were they buddies? No. But McCain didn't like Trump. Once Trump got in the position of destroying McCain's friends in the debates, Republican debates, McCain turned against Trump. He didn't like that. He didn't like the little Marco stuff. He didn't like the Lion Ted stuff. He didn't like the Jeb Bush stuff. And that's when McCain started to undermine Trump, which he absolutely did.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
that's
agree
why
that.
Trump now despises McCain.
Bill, can
that's
we take
the inside story?
Nice. There we go. Is that going to be in the book? Are we going to be able to get that in the book?
Yes, actually, I'm writing that part now about the debates and Megyn Kelly and all of that.
Mm, that's going to be
fascinating.
And
I have a vantage point on that nobody in the world has, which is why you're going to love the United States of Trump when it comes out.
Mm, in September. Let's go to the border real quick here, Bill. Beto O'Rourke, or Robert Francis O'Rourke, which is his actual name, was talking about why we don't need a wall on our southern border. Listen.
We do not need any walls. $30 billion, 2,000 miles long, 30 feet high, that will not be built on the international boundary line, which is the center line of the Rio Grande River. That wall will be built well into the interior, on someone's ranch, someone else's farm, someone else's home. You and I will be forced to take their property to solve a problem that we do not have.
A problem that we do not have on the southern border.
It's just unbelievable that this is a three-term congressman from El Paso, and he can walk across the border and he telling you don't have a problem when it's 70,000 migrants taken into U.S. custody in February alone, all being told that as soon as they touch the United States. They can apply for asylum, and 8 years later, maybe they'll get a hearing, and they don't have a problem. This is what I mean when you hear things like, I don't know, Beto O'Rourke. I mean, I have no idea about this guy. But when I hear things like that, he's disqualified immediately in this voter's consideration.
Let me ask you.
An Emerson poll just came out today. It's got Bernie Sanders tied with Biden at 26%. Now, Emerson's not a reliable polling outfit. They're very rarely right. But I don't know one human being who supports Bernie Sanders. Do you know anybody?
No.
Personally?
No.
I don't know one person. Who are these people? Where are they?
They're on the college campuses. Many of them are on the college campuses. Let me ask you.
I guess Emerson is a college in Boston, and maybe they poll their own crew.
Yeah.
But I'm saying to myself, are you insane? Why don't we just have Roseanne be president?
Well,
all right. Why? I mean, if you're going to go Bernie, go Roseanne. At least we'll have a few laughs.
I have to tell you, I think that might be a possibility. They've put almost everybody who is just a circus freak or clown into the running here.
But say Sanders isn't a freak or a clown, and I mean. You had, I think, Mark Levin on last night screaming how they were sick. That's not, they're not, no. But if you just step back. Bernie Sanders is a communist. All right, he's not a socialist. He honeymooned in the Soviet Union.
Yeah, I would put that into the freak category. I said freak clown.
I don't like that word. I mean, he is
it's my word of the day now.
Communist. He does not believe in free enterprise.
Okay, so let me go here with Beto. I want to give you a scenario and see what you think about this. Beto said this week, I open it up to you. I can be anybody you want me to be. So tell me who you want me to be, who you need me to be. So if you look back at his history, he was a hacker. Part of this really bad hacking group when he was young. He was writing really dark stuff. Then he leaves that and he goes to an Ivy League school where he's the head of the crew team, where he, you know, he's out rowing, you know, with Buffy and Tiffany. And it's polar opposite. Then he goes back and is in some grunge, really bad grunge band. I don't think this guy knows who he is.
But why do you care? Why do you care if he knows who he is? I mean, you want to go out on a double date with him?
He's going to be running as president, important.
No. He's going to be running, and Hollywood idiots will fund him, and he'll get out there. But in the end, he's not going to get the nomination.
He might become the vice president, and with the age of these guys,
they're not putting two white guys on a ticket, Beck. That's never going to happen. Okay, he's going to be out there. He'll entertain us. He'll be entertaining. But if you are an American, all right, a person born in this country who wants good things for the country and believes in its nobility, and you have a guy who lives in El Paso telling you, there's no problem here. The hundreds of thousands of tons of narcotics coming across. That's not really a problem. You just look at him and you go, next.
Bill, you seem pretty confident in who's going to win this nomination. If you had to break it down by percentage chance, how would you distribute your percentages?
Well, I'd say Biden's got a 50% chance now. Okay. You don't even know about Biden, because Biden, he's a moody kind of guy. He's on Thursday, he's all jazzed to run, and on Friday, you know, his back hurts. So I'd say 50%. The establishment Democrats, these are the old money Democrats. They want them.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But they realize that if they get him, they have to have Kamala on the second ticket or some minority woman, not Pocahontas, because that's too loaded. Kamala Harris, she, former prosecutor, that kind of thing. That's what I see. But look, no one on earth thought Donald Trump would be elected. No one. No one on earth thought Barack Obama would do it. So, yes, a dark horse could emerge, but it isn't going to be Beto. All right, because Beto has nothing. He brings nothing. Just as you said, well, you know, you're just sitting here, this is impossible. The Chinese negotiating with Beto, can you just imagine it? I'm sitting there, you go, Putin? Putin's going, please, give me Beto, please, so I can take over all of South Asia. It's just insane. And that's where we are. But the media will never tell you the truth. They'll never analyze these candidates in an honest way. In a million years where they say, excuse me, Mr. O'Rourke, we have tons of heroin coming in from Mexico. There may be a little problem there. Maybe 75,000 homicides south of the border. That might be a little problematic, Mr. O'Rourke. Never going to get it. Never going to get it, because they all want Trump out. They don't care who runs.
The only time they're going to be honest is right now, while they're still divided on who should be the candidate. And so they will snipe at each other and they'll release dirt on each other. But as soon as it is narrowed down, that you'll never hear a tough question. Yeah, they will.
But the media is not going to snipe at them. Yeah. They'll snipe at each other.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see these debates, who can out-socialize the other.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm going to give you this. No, wait, I'm going to give you that. I'm going to give you this. Can you top this? I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the debate is going to be moderated by Raul Castro. I mean, you're not going to have a lot of tough questions.
You already. I mean, the CNN debates are crazy. Bill O'Reilly, thank you so much. I appreciate it. BillO'Reilly.com.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Dr. Robert Epstein, he is a senior research psychologist, and he has been looking into Google and others. Are they affecting the outcome of elections? I feel for you, because I know what it's like when you're speaking the truth, and sometimes nobody wants to listen to it. Somebody doesn't want to listen to it, and how frustrating that is. And this is really important. So I know you don't necessarily love us conservatives, but I love people who look for truth.
Well, first of all, Glenn, let me give you a big thank you, because the last time I was on your show, you gave out a link where people can support my research.
Yeah.
And do you know that we got thousands of dollars in donations for the nonprofit where we do the research? Really? I mean, there are people who are even, you know, signed up for, you know, monthly payments.
Wow, that's great.
I mean, it's amazing that you made that happen. You must have the most generous listeners.
I do. I do. We have they have fed more people and literally freed more slaves in the Middle East than countries, literally countries. I mean, they're being recognized by Australia, by the United States State Department. One of our partners, we got a Nobel Peace Prize for the work that they're doing to be able to save people all across the world and free them from slavery. So they are a great audience.
Well, you definitely have made things happen, you know, for me, and I really appreciate it. And as far as me not liking conservatives, that I'm not my politics aren't conservative, but I've actually, because conservatives seem to like my work, I've actually made very, very dear friends who happen to be, you know, conservative.
Right.
I mean, Peter Schweitzer, I now consider a very dear friend.
He's a good guy.
And he's the Clinton Cash guy. Yeah. And I've actually become friends with Ann Coulter, even though she makes me cringe when she says something on television. But, you know, so
We all have those friends. We all have those friends. So tell everybody, in case you don't know, what you do and what you're looking into.
Sure. Well, there's two different things I do. And unfortunately, the LA Times just totally got this wrong. One is, for more than 6 years, I've been doing randomized controlled scientific studies showing the new power that companies like Google and Facebook have to shift opinions and votes without people knowing. And that's very, very rigorous research published in top scientific journals, including the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. LA Times, did they even mention that? Mm-hmm. No. Could anyone possibly find fault with that work? No, you can't publish in those journals if your work is faulty. Now, the second thing that I've been doing more quietly is trying to learn how to build monitoring systems. These companies surveil us 24 hours a day. I'm the only person so far in the world who's developed two monitoring systems for surveilling them. In other words, for figuring out what they're showing people, especially in the days leading up to elections. Mm-hmm. And I did it in 2016. That got reported by the Washington Post. And I've done it again. I did it again in 2018. That story just broke this morning. And I am making progress in learning how to do this kind of monitoring and learning how to detect bias in the content that these companies are showing people. And once again, I caught Google, not Bing or Yahoo, but I caught Google with their digital pants down. And you know what's there, they should be embarrassed about, because I found very clear and strong liberal bias in the content that they were showing people in the days leading up to the election. And that was enough. If they were doing that nationwide, which I didn't monitor the whole country, but if they had been doing what I found nationwide, that would have shifted upwards of 78.2 million votes to Democrats in across multiple races, with no one having the slightest idea that they have been influenced in this way. That's why this is a very, very dangerous kind of influence. That's why we also need monitoring systems to be running on a large scale. And those are the two things I do, the scientific stuff and then the, you know, developing monitoring systems.
So I want to get into what you found and how they're swaying elections. But I want to ask you first, are you familiar with the book Surveillance Capitalism?
The new book by Shoshana Zuboff. Oh, yes. Yeah. In fact, I mentioned I have a new piece out this morning in USA Today criticizing Elizabeth Warren's plan for breaking up big tech. It's completely toothless. But I mentioned Zuboff's book in there as being a superb book, but that focuses on one aspect of the problem, which is the surveillance aspect.
Yes.
There are actually three big problems here. There's the surveillance, there's the censorship, and then there's the piece that I study, which is the most dangerous of all. That's the manipulation.
So I think that she covers, she touches on those. And I think, when you look at, they are looking to build something of absolute certainty so they know how to predict. Then it's quite logical, if you just look at this as a sales tool, to then just nudge people this way or that way, and it becomes terribly frightening, and not just for capitalist reasons, where you're doing things and buying things without even knowing why, but because they can move and manipulate you any way they want, whether that's to vote for something, to buy for something, or hate something or love something. It's truly dangerous. And I think you're the only one that is actually monitoring and seeing any of these effects and how they're doing it. So tell me what you found in 2018. How do you know that Google was doing this and Bing and Yahoo was not?
Well, I set up now for the second time a Nielsen type network of field agents. And this is what Nielsen does with their families. Mm-hmm. They have this network that they're all secret. And, they look over the shoulders of people in the families to see what they're watching on TV. So I set up, once again, a an anonymous network of field agents and developed special software. It's all custom stuff. So that allowed me, with their permission, to look over their shoulders and see what content they were fed when they were doing election-related searches in the days leading up to the 2018 election. I focused mainly on three staunchly Republican congressional districts in California, 45, 48, and 49, and literally collected a massive amount of data. No one's ever done this before, not at this scale. So I preserved more than 47,000 election-related searches and the 400,000 web pages to which the search results linked. And, of course, I know where those web pages are being shown to people in search results. And so I can measure the bias in the web pages and then see where they're being shown in those search results. And sure enough, on Google, those higher search results definitely are showing people content that favors Democratic candidates. Google and Bing, much more balanced, but Google, very, very clear bias in what they are showing people.
Yeah, I just want to correct you. You mean that Yahoo and Bing are much more fair, but Google is clearly biased. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I should have said Yahoo and Bing.
Yeah.
And the numbers are very strong. These are not subtle effects. These are very, very big numbers. And not only that, we found bias in Google in all 10 search positions on the first page of search results. And we know from the experimental research that that shifts a lot of votes. It shifts the opinions and the votes of undecided voters.
Okay, so
those are the people. Yeah,
I want to get into that. Let me take a quick break for a minute, and then I want to come back. And you explain just that. When that first page, if they're changing, I think you said five of them, it changes people's points of view. But all 10 of them, it definitely shifts. And we'll get into that with Dr. Robert Epstein. And also, I'll give you a way to help him, because he is the only guy doing this, and he's searching for truth.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Sean Carney is with us. He is the president and CEO of 40 Days for Life. He is depicted in the movie Unplanned as a really nice guy. and as he walks in, I'm like, yep, that's the guy from the movie. Sean, welcome to the program. How are you?
Good to be on. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so you are the one, or your organization is the one that turned Abby Johnson. And she was running a Planned Parenthood. She had had abortions herself, but she had an experience. How long into your knowing her did she have this experience?
8 years.
8 years.
Which really helped. Otherwise, I would have been tempted not to believe her. But I knew her for 8 years. My wife and I volunteered on the other side of the fence for the local pro-life organization. And she volunteered for Planned Parenthood, and then Abby and I became directors of opposing organizations at the same time. And right. So we always said, you know, of course we're there for the babies and for the women, to give them other medical alternatives, but we're also there for the workers. And mm-hmm. Abby had the humility to take us up on it.
What I really like about this movie, and it opens next week, called Unplanned, is that it shows it's the first time I've seen this handled right. The way you handled the people who were screaming murderers, and they were showing the bloody pictures, there's no one going to be attracted to that.
Right.
It just scares and freaks out the women who are going in for an abortion. You guys separated yourself from that, and
yeah.
You took a very different approach.
Yeah, it freaks me out too. Because, yeah. You know, that's not an approach that is effective. Some of those people may have good intentions, but we were not that. 40 Days for Life is peaceful. It's law-abiding. Our folks sign a statement of peace, and that's why so many come over and choose life, you know, at the last moment. But it's also why we've helped 186 abortion facility workers leave. Abby was the 26th worker that we helped. She was just our worker where the campaign started in College Station, Texas. So I knew her well. She's one of three Planned Parenthood managers who we've helped leave.
She had a traumatic experience where she actually had to hold the ultrasound. And so she watched this baby fight for its life as it was killed. And that's what changed her. When she came to the fence, or she didn't come to the fence. She came, at least in the movie, she came to your office.
In my office, which happened.
Really? So tell me about that day.
It was October 5th of 2009. And somebody walked in and said, Abby Johnson is here, which is the opening of the trailer, the movie trailer. That really happened. And I walked in. And she was distraught. I'll never forget, Glenn, seeing her Planned Parenthood security card drenched in her mascara and her makeup from her tears. I'd seen her swipe that card, you know, hundreds of times. But that's when I knew Abby's changed. I've known this woman for 8 years, and she's changed. And I said, it looks like you've had a rough day at the office. And she kind of laughed and said, you could say that. And she told me what she witnessed, which was a 13-week-old baby boy, as you said, fight for his life with no chance and lose it in front of her eyes.
She's interesting because, as the movie depicts, Planned Parenthood took her right to the top fast. They kind of ease you into it, but they took her right in and really kind of tested her, pushed her, you know, by showing her the little feet and everything else that they have to kind of piece the body back together to make sure there's nothing left in the mom. And she didn't have a problem with that.
She didn't. And I can't explain that. She can't explain that. No one could explain that. Most people would run out screaming, saying, right, I'm out of here. And they do a good job in the movie of showing Abby's change over time. Mm-hmm. She starts lying. She starts manipulating. She, you know, they really show that. And then her change of heart. It doesn't surprise me that she really climbed the ladder, because there's a big disconnect between corporate Planned Parenthood in America and the people that actually run their abortion facilities where they operate.
What does that mean?
It means that they are often left out to dry. This isn't the most talented group of people that are managing. You know, there's almost 700 Planned Parenthood locations across the country. And when we have a peaceful 40 Days for Life campaign, they get no support from corporate. And it's extremely effective for us because we can work with local pregnancy centers and get women other options, other medical options, and they're just not supported in the grassroots. They're very top heavy. So when they get what I would call Abby as a star, you know, she was an employee of the year in her mid-20s, they shoot her up to the top. And what they definitely underestimated about her was that she was young enough to still have a conscience and not be hardened to this. And
she actually believed she was doing the right thing for women.
I think many of them do.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. You can't, there couldn't be that number of monsters.
No, not at all. And you know, I think they show that she did feel that she was trying to help women, and they all feel that, you know, otherwise they probably wouldn't do it. And that's one of the reasons, you know, we've helped 186 workers leave.
What do you attribute that to? How does that happen?
They approach us. We don't go out lurking for workers saying, you got to get out. Mm-hmm. They have to approach us. That is our policy. And when they approach us and they say, I just can't do this anymore. My conscience has gotten to me. That's usually what they say. We had one abortion doctor say, I think I need to see a priest. It's not people that are mad or disgruntled and quit. And that happens too. They're like, these crazy people.
Yeah, but those aren't the people coming to you.
No, not at all. These are people that actually have a change of heart. And, you know, Glenn, the conversion gate on the abortion issue only swings in one direction. Mm-hmm. There's not some mom with 5 kids and 10 grandkids that's run a pregnancy help center her whole life who all of a sudden wakes up and is 60 and decides, I should have been running an abortion facility my whole life. And now I need an agent and a speaking tour. Right. You know, I mean, believe me, we would hear them. Right. They would be on the news every single day. So, you know, there's an exodus out of the abortion industry. And there are so many good people that at one point supported reproductive rights who don't. And there are so many women in the pro-life movement you know, is often led by those who have had an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, men who have paid for an abortion, workers like Abby who have done an abortion. And that certainly convicted me as a young man when I heard women who have had an abortion share their testimony. I thought, what am I doing? You know, I'm 19.
Perhaps most famously, the woman from Roe versus Wade.
Right? Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. being a pro-life activist.
So that was the biggest mistake of her life.
Yeah. Right. And Bernard Nathanson, who's the founder of NARAL, was the first abortion doctor to have a change of heart.
Wow.
And he witnessed an abortion that he did, very similar, but much earlier than Abby's experience, where he actually saw the abortion he was doing.
You're in the movie, your organization, I mean, you guys are out there at this clinic seemingly all the time. Like, what is the reality of how often and how long you guys are out there?
So at that location, we were out there year round.
Wow.
And then when
every day.
That's incredible.
Wow.
And when we launched 40 Days for Life as a nationally coordinated effort, that's in the movie, in the fall of 2007, you know, that was sort of ground zero, and we were hoping it would go to 20 or 25 cities, and it ended up going to 816 in 56 different countries. And you know, it's a beautiful thing because obviously we do this. It's out of love of God, but it's love of country as well. There are men and women who have died so that we have our freedom of speech. My grandfather was in the Pacific in World War II, and shame on us, liberal or conservative, if we don't use our freedom of speech. And it's a very patriotic thing to do, as well as obviously a faith-based thing. And
I think it takes on another dimension of patriotism. I think this is our last call. Now that they have exposed themselves, that they don't mean rare. They
right.
don't mean safe, rare. They don't mean any of that. They mean I have a right to kill anything that I want, even after birth. Now we're talking infanticide. And I think this is the line in the sand, that if America doesn't meet this and reject it, and turn back to God and say, okay, we're not on that side. We're on the side of life, not of death. You are our guide. I think all the protection comes away from this country.
It does. You're exactly right. It shakes us to our core. Who are we? Where did we come from? Where are we going?
Mm-hmm.
And if we, Glenn, this isn't the pro-abortion nuts on the street who come up from their parents' basement to yell at pro-life people. It's not the fringe. These are senators, governors, people that, you know, sound nice and are mm-hmm. supposedly well-educated, saying, we will leave a baby girl on a table left to die. It is uncharted waters in the United States of America. And I know for us, it has been a huge wake-up call. We have just had a swarm of new volunteers. It's perfect timing for the movie to come out on March 29th. And it's a wake-up call. If this isn't a wake-up call, then wake-up calls don't exist.
That's why I say it's the last. This is the last call, I really think. Tell me quickly, you're starting a 40-day...
We're in the middle of it.
Okay, tell me about it.
Yeah,
what is it?
40 Days for Life is going on right now in 377 cities around the world. If you go to 40daysforlife.com, you can participate. 30% of our local campaigns are run by women who have had an abortion. It's my favorite stat. And so most of the folks, you have a little fear the first time going out. Don't worry. Sign up. We'll take you through it. We've never had an incident. You will never regret going and praying at a 40 Days for Life vigil.
It is so fantastic. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Unplanned, so you know, I've seen the movie. It's received a rating of R, which makes absolutely no sense, especially if you don't believe that that's the life of a child. The scene that is objectionable lasts about 30 seconds on film, will remain with you for the rest of your life. And it is a CGI of a baby fighting for its life on an ultrasound. So it's a bad, scratchy, black and white image, just like an ultrasound. But you see the baby actually fight for its life, as it actually did when it changed Abby Johnson's heart. And they don't want your children to be able to see this movie. Yet they will fight hard for your children to be able to go and have an abortion without your permission. They don't want you to have your children see this without you sitting next to them. I highly recommend that you take your kids to this movie and you do sit next to them. In fact, my faith does not like rated R movies and says you should stay away from rated R movies. I so highly recommend this, and I highly recommend it for your children to come with you. And I do not mean small children, but 13 years old. Bring your children with you. They need to understand this movie is game changing. I am going to be flying out. I'm volunteering my time to fly out to Salt Lake City to do a premiere of this on the night that it premieres and opens up nationwide. I'll give you all of the details of which theater or theaters it's going to be at. And that will be next Friday. I will be there live, and I will welcome you, talk about the movie. We'll do question and answer afterwards. But please, please take your family to see this movie. It is one of the most important movies, I think, in my lifetime. Halfway through it, I thought, I may see the end of abortion in my lifetime. In the next 10 years, I could see the end of abortion. This is the time.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.